Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Now to a mother's love and a little boy with a gift that would see critics from around the world clamouring for his art. On May 8, 1988, Judy Sharp welcomed her first bub into the world. His name? Tim. The next 2 years were a succession of visit after visit to doctor after doctor, as Judy begged for support, only to be told that her boy was fine and that she was the one with the problem. Then one doctor took notice and Tim was diagnosed with autism. Judy was told the best thing she could do would be to put Tim away and get on with the rest of her life. Judy ignored the advice. In fact, willfully did the precise opposite. And now Tim is a world-renowned artist. Judy, thanks so much for joining us on Open House. Let's go back to that day that you welcomed Tim into the world.
Well, it was definitely the happiest day of my life. I'd never ever seen anything so perfect or beautiful. And I just fell in love with him immediately, and I was over the top. I think I was actually a bit embarrassing. I was so ecstatic.
So no different to any other proud mum on the planet.
I like to think I loved him more than anybody could ever love somebody else, to be honest. Sorry.
No, I hear you. I'm not going to argue the point with a passionate mum.
No.
So everything went to plan. You got home, and everything was just the way you'd imagined motherhood to be?
Not quite. No, after he was born the first few days, things were a bit slow.
Yeah.
But they say that's, you know, quite often common.
Yeah.
But as soon as I got him home, he woke up and he never went back to sleep.
Wow.
And he was crying all the time. It was like straight out of the hospital doors and this thing started straight away. So, of course, I'm going to start thinking that it's me.
Yeah.
So by the time that he was 20 days old, not 21, because I remember it so distinctly, he was 20 days old and I was at the doctor saying, what's wrong with my baby? He hasn't slept for 3 days. And he hadn't. You know, maybe a 10-minute cat nap all the time, but he just cried and was awake all the time. And I was convinced there was something medically wrong with him. I kept going back, and then they kept pointing the finger at me more and more. And then they started to suggest perhaps I had, you know, postnatal depression, that I just wasn't coping, that I needed some psychological help.
Wow.
That I needed counselling, that, it was all my fault. There was nothing physically wrong with this child, so it had to be my fault.
Describe the desperation that's welling up inside you at this point.
Well, it was all-encompassing, you know, that you just know and you think, I'm his mother, I should be able to comfort him, I should be able to do something for him. I'm living in a neighbourhood where there was four other babies around the same age.
Mm.
None of them were doing what my son was doing. And people were saying to me, other people were saying to me, you know, what's wrong with your baby? But I knew in my heart that it wasn't, because I was actually ecstatic to have this little baby.
Yeah.
And that, even though I didn't sleep, and at times I was in the depths of despair, I was just so exhausted because I had to walk as well. You just couldn't put him on the floor and leave him there. You had to carry him all the time. Even though I was so depressed, or worn out rather, there was this incredible joy in my heart that I had this little fellow.
Yeah.
And that I loved him so much. And I actually thought at times I was quite honoured because I got to be with him 24/7 and see every little miracle that happened. You know, he was changing day by day, minute by minute, and I had him in my arms all the time. So in a way, I was actually thinking this is the best thing that's ever happened to me in my life. If only I could make my son happy. And that was my big worry.
And then there were moments like the jumpsuit moment where you knew something wasn't right.
Oh, yeah, that was crazy. You know, a three-month-old baby that can't sit up. You've put a brand-new little outfit on him that your friends had made, so it's handmade with wool. And as soon as it goes on him, he's screaming his head off. And I jumped up and I thought, oh, no, I've stabbed him with the nappy pin. Because back then, nappy pins were all the go.
Yeah.
So I ripped the clothes off him and I look at the nappy and think, no, it's fine. And he'd stopped crying by this stage. So I thought, oh, maybe it was just in the wrong way and it's pressed on something or whatever. Put the jumpsuit back on him and the same reaction. It was as if a pin was being stuck deep inside him. And this is a three-month-old child.
Wow.
And it was just so obvious. He never wore that outfit again.
Yeah. When was that first diagnosis, and how did that come to be? Because you've seen numerous doctors. You've been told it's your problem, Mum. You're not coping well with being a mother. You need to get over it. Here's some medication to help you sleep, and none of this is working. Tell me about that moment where somebody says, hang on, this isn't about you.
Well, we went to the doctors, and luckily we couldn't see our regular doctor. So we got to see another one of the partners, an older man. My other son was due to get his immunisation needles. And so I had the baby, and I had Tim. I have a baby bag. I put that down on the floor. Tim hated that. To him, it meant we were staying, we're never leaving. So he's upset with that. At that stage, he couldn't stand shoelaces being undone. His had come undone. Mine had come undone.
And how old is Tim at this point?
Two and a half. The door had been closed, another thing he hated. I had to put the baby down on the bed for the doctor to examine. He couldn't stand that either because he also thought it meant we left the baby behind. The shoes are undone, the baby's on the bed, the bag's on the floor, and the door's closed. Tim's gone nuts. He's grabbing at the door, he's pulling up the shoelaces, he's pushing at me to get the baby, he's trying to lift up the bag, running around screaming, crying, and he's in terror. Wow. He's not being naughty. You can see the absolute fear in his eyes. And the doctor turned to me and said, how often does this happen? I said, oh, every day, all the time, and I don't know why. He said, you cannot go on like this. This child will kill you. And straight away he said, you're going to go and see this doctor now. And he rang up and got us in for an appointment. You had to see these outbursts to see it. It was peculiar. It was strange. It was frightening. Mm. You could feel the intensity that it was for Tim. So off we go to another doctor who sends us to. He said, you've got to go and see this fellow. He's the best in Brisbane. He's the best specialist in this childhood area. You know, he'll be able to help you. And my main concern at this time was that Tim hadn't developed speech and he was nearly three. Mm. And they'd all said, wait till he was three. So the day after his third birthday, we go to see this other specialist. And that was the worst day of my life. I couldn't believe what I was told. It was the last thing I'd ever expected to have to encounter, and it just broke my heart.
Because Tim's diagnosed with life on the autism spectrum, but this is before the days of Google where you can do your own research. So at this point, you have this spectre of this unknown darkness that has settled down over your life.
Exactly.
Your head's spinning. What else is happening for you?
Well, at the same time, I had I was in an abusive marriage as well, and that was absolutely terrifying. I didn't know what was going to happen to us or how much worse it could get. And my other son had been born 10 weeks premature. I had died on the operating table while during his birth, so I'd been very, very unwell. And then we had this daily onslaught of this abuse going on. And I had the issues with Tim. And I also had the issues of Sam being quite small and needing extra care. And I'd only got him home after 6 weeks in the hospital and I had to rush him back for an emergency operation. So I had all this going on, but at the same time, you know, I was really lucky because I was just so happy and so in love with these little boys. I never realised what having children would do for me.
Judy, I don't know how you're doing all of this, and now you're told that Tim is autistic.
Exactly. And worse than that, it was much worse than that. As I said, it was the worst day of my life, because the doctor sat opposite me and said, put him away and forget about him.
Put him away?
Put him away and forget about him. He said, he will never speak, he will never go to school, he will never learn anything. He feels absolutely nothing for you. He only uses you as a tool to get what you want. And he said, the best thing you can do is get on with your own life and pretend you never had him.
Judy.
Yep. So he ripped my heart out that day by the roots. And I was just absolutely devastated. I couldn't believe it.
I can't imagine what that drive home is like with all of that spinning around inside your head.
Oh, yes. And you've had your heart taken out. You're empty. There's just nothing left. You absolutely destroyed and devastated. How anyone could say that about a three-year-old child.
So where do you go? What do you do that afternoon?
That afternoon, I just sat in shock. So I've got two little boys who are very active, and the baby, and a red cattle dog who's crazy. And he never stayed in the yard. He was just naughty. And he sat on my feet. He could see how upset I was. He sat on my feet that whole day. And those two little boys sat by my side. They could even sense how devastated. You know, I was as close to nothing, absolutely nothing. Then the next day I got up and thought, that's enough of that. Time to move on. I've got a lot to do. So we were very lucky when Sam was born. We had a great paediatrician. And I thought, that's what I need. I need someone that I can trust and that I can believe in. I don't need to be with a man like that, who I consider evil, to be that cruel to a child.
Mm.
So that was my first step to go and see this other doctor who was really, really caring and knew us well, which was great, and was able to help us start the ball rolling.
Speech therapy. Was that the only way of gaining control back of the situation?
Yes, because like you mentioned before, Dwayne, I had no idea what I was dealing with. I didn't know how to tackle this. At the time Tim was diagnosed, it was 1 in 10,000 children. So there wasn't a lot of information out there at all.
You wouldn't have known anybody living on the autism spectrum.
Nobody at all. No, yeah. And nobody knew of anybody who knew of anybody. And there weren't the books. All the books were very old and saying dreadful things with no future. And I couldn't possibly even read that because I had to stay focused on what I wanted for my son. So I was fortunate enough then to... we started with some speech therapy, and that worked really well. He went from, a couple of words that he used very rarely that weren't clear to anyone else. Like he called... he'd say bar, which meant he wanted a drink. Mm-hmm. Nobody knew what that meant, except for me. And he called Sam Nam. Never called me mum. I didn't have a name. Or he might say bye because he wanted to get out of the situation.
Right.
So we started with the speech therapy, and so he went from those few words to in a month with 10, and by 3 months, 100 words. So it was obviously working, but then my marriage got much, much worse, and I had to escape. The day I tried to move was just a nightmare. Every time I put something in a bag to try and get out of the house, he'd be pulling out. He was beside himself, and it was the one time I had to say to myself, I have to ignore him. I can't even try to comfort him. We've just got to get out. Within a couple of days of getting to the house, the new house, he was happier. He was more settled.
Wow.
So obviously the stress that was going on in the house, my constant state of fear and terror, because it was all-encompassing. It was physical as well. You just felt like you couldn't breathe or anything. So Tim actually settled in quite well once we got through it all. The biggest thing is when I moved the house, I didn't have enough money to pay for electricity. So Tim loved to have the television on, and it had to be on all the time. He didn't watch it all the time, but I think he actually liked the drone, the sound in the background, and it had to be on Channel 7. So, of course, without electricity...
Had to be on the right channel.
Yes. But we couldn't watch anything else. And there was not one show on Channel 7. Sorry, Channel 7. it was difficult. but without... And, he only ate three foods, chicken, chocolate and bread. Not a bad combination, but... I needed a fridge for at least two of those, and we didn't have it. And, that was very traumatic for him. That was the hardest part, was not having that consistency. So I had to go and borrow some money to get the power turned on so that we could get that normality back. And then Tim, I kept a diary because I thought someone's going to have a go at me and say I've done the wrong thing. And I wanted to be sure in my mind. And Tim just settled in, and he was so much happier. For all of us, it was the best thing to do.
What are you doing for support, and where are you going for it?
I was virtually on my own. I didn't... Because of the situation with the marriage, I'd been cut off from my friends and my family. So I didn't have a strong support network. People would come if they could, but it wasn't like normal. So I had to try and find what resources I could. I guess I would say, though, that I never really, really focused on the autism as much, probably because, like you said, there wasn't the information. My focus was on my son. I knew who he was. I knew a lot of the things they said about him. I didn't always see them that way. I saw a person first, and I think I knew what that person needed to be able to grow in life. One of those was speech. Another was taking away a lot of the fears that he had that made his life so unpleasant. So rather than coming at it as a perspective of trying to deal with all the autism, I was trying to look at Tim and get Tim out first. And I say get out because I could see him in there. I saw that personality. I saw that intelligence. I saw what a sweet, beautiful boy he was. And that's who I was looking for trying to find.
When you decide to send him to a regular school in your neighbourhood. Tell me about that process and perhaps any counter-advice that you were given, or did you just believe this was the right thing to do and this was going to happen?
I did believe that. Everyone else said that he should go to a special school, and I have nothing against special schools. I've seen what they've done. He was in a special education unit for kindy, And I thought they were great. They were wonderful, caring people. And I thought it was a big risk, but I wanted to try it. I thought he deserved that chance. If it didn't work, we'd go for the other one. But I couldn't find a school that would take him, no matter what I offered or no matter how far. In the end, we found a small Catholic school that was actually 30 kilometres away from home.
Goodness.
So I used to drive. And as soon as I walked in there, there was a field, and I knew it. That was the place for us. And they were prepared to give us a go. It was on a trial, but yep, that's where we started.
How were Tim's early school days?
It wasn't easy. A lot of the parents said to me, look, we've never seen a kid like it. We don't think he's going to make it. And they weren't, or, you know, they weren't being nasty. They were saying, you know, how can we help you? What can we do? You're doing it tough. Some of the teachers said, you know, we've never seen a kid like this, but they never gave up, and they remain some of our best friends. They're our family. They filled in a lot of gaps for us, and they were committed to Tim. And that's what I asked, and that's what I got.
We started our conversation talking about ways of getting Tim to communicate with you and learning new words. You found drawing pictures to communicate with Tim was an effective tool, and was this perhaps where Tim's artistic temperament started to emerge?
It did, from the very, very first drawing. So he was only about 4 years of age,
yeah,
and because of the... we didn't have any money. You know, we got food from the Salvation Army, for which I'm eternally grateful. There was no speech therapy. We were put on waiting lists with the public system. I'm still on those waiting lists for Tim. So I had to do things myself. I had to think of anything I could, and I had a lot to deal with. There were so many issues in the beginning that he had problems with. Clothes, eating, toileting, sleeping, the amount of distress. And you know, I'm inspired by the Helen Keller story. And I thought, Tim's got all these issues, but he can see. I wouldn't have been surprised if he was actually reading at that stage. And I thought, my words don't work with him. What if I try this drawing? And I can't draw. I have no artistic talent whatsoever. None. Zip. So but I drew stick figures, and I explained to him, you know, I got him over, and he actually looked, which was a big thing in the first place, that he would actually stand there and look. When I finished drawing, I put the pencil down, and Tim pushed my hand back to grab the pencil.
Fantastic.
That actually still chokes me up, because that was our first major interaction.
Wow.
Where I could get him to engage with me. And then he just fell in love with it. He would want me to draw all day and all night. We had paper all over the house. But he wouldn't try. It took about a year, more towards when he was after, you know, about 4.5 for him to draw. And from that very first drawing, there was something very clear that he had something going on there.
Do you have that first drawing?
Yes, I do.
What is it?
It's an elephant.
Is it really?
Yeah, very, very cute elephant. And he still loves animals very much.
As Tim starts to emerge out of himself, both with his spoken language, but more through his drawing increasingly, what changes are you seeing come about in Tim?
Well, it was just this whole imagination and intelligence. I never doubted his intelligence, not ever. I knew it was in there, but it was a way for it to come out. And there was this humour, and there was this way that he saw the world that was all coming out through the art, that if I'd relied on speech, I never would have seen it.
Yeah.
And he also doesn't use gesture or, you know, pointing or written word to express himself so well, but it comes out in through the art. And it was just an insight into the different and interesting way that Tim sees the world.
Do you remember when Laser Beak Man was born?
he was 11 years old, and the drawing had become such a part of our life for the three of us.
Yeah.
So it was always on the table, and Tim was sitting there, as he often did during the day, drawing, and said, when I grow up, I'm going to be Laser Beak Man. And I said, good for you, Tim. You can be anything you want. And I believed that.
Yeah.
And then he kept saying, I thought, who is Laser Beak Man? So I went over and had a look, and I thought, I burst out laughing. And I thought, that is so cute. And he started to talk to him, and he was a superhero. And Tim had always loved superheroes, Batman, Spider-Man, Superman, watched the lot. And he just wanted his own superhero. He did his own thing.
One of the aspects of autism is that it's sometimes seen as an emotionless existence for some children on that spectrum. Tim was working out extraordinary emotions through not only his pictures, but the way he was colouring them in and the way he was getting his characters to act his life out. What are specialists saying about Tim and his art at this point, either artistic critics or medical professionals or both?
Yeah, I think they do love it. You know, if you don't know Tim's background and you just see the art on the wall, we find people are just drawn to it because of its vibrancy and its depth of colour and the emotion that it evokes.
Yep.
So the people in the art world, they're just ecstatic about it because it's different. It's not like anything else that's out there. And the specialists that deal with autism, we hear from them all the time, and they just find it so inspirational. And they use it as a reference point for people that are starting the journey and who similarly think that, you know, you can't extract this emotion or you can't understand it or there's not the empathy or, you know, the kids don't see things the same way. And there it is, Tim shows that that's not so at all.
Tim's art unlocked his own spirit for the world to see, and it also unlocked a whole bunch of other stuff for your family, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, number one, a mortgage, you know.
Yes, yeah.
You know, he becomes the only Australian picked for the world's largest arts festival for people with disability.
Incredible.
In Washington, D.C., and so we have to go. So 15 years later, I finally got a property settlement just in time to get another mortgage so that we could all go over to Washington and watch Tim carry the Australian flag into the opening ceremony at the John F. Kennedy Performing Arts Centre. It's just mind-blowing. You know, even now, I still wake up every morning, shake my head, and I say, I just can't believe this stuff happens. It just comes out of nowhere. And people are so good. They reach out. They can see the joy in his art. They want to share it. They want to enjoy it.
Give me some insight into the moments that I'm going to ask Tim this question in a few moments' time myself, but some of the highlights in Tim's artistic endeavours, some of those moments where you've looked around and thought to yourself, I'd just like to take that first doctor who told me that it was time to lock him away and put him in the middle of this crowd right now.
I'll tell you one of the more simpler ones. It's not one of the real big glory moments, is we go into an awful lot of schools with children with autism and without. Sometimes we go into a school with kids with autism and the teachers say, look, they're not going to be interested in this. Their needs are very high. Tim sits on a chair, shows them his art, says a few things, draws for them. They're sitting on his knee. They're coming up and holding his hand. That, I just bore my eyes out to see that interaction. And I think, as far as I'm concerned, he never has to do another thing. There's a fellow here in Brisbane, big biker, 6 foot, cats, long hair, wild man, little boy with autism. He's 7. He's never said a word to his parents, but every night he reads them the Laser Beak Man story. Tim never has to do another thing in his life, as far as I'm concerned. Then there's the big moments. There's a film about Tim was shown in the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City. Tim's the first person in the world with autism to have his creation turned into a TV series that's screened on the ABC and Cartoon Network. There's an exhibition about Tim in the National Museum. A music festival inspired by Tim started in Nashville, Tennessee. And the next big one coming up, the TEDx talk at the Opera House in our home country, in the best building in the country, in the most inspirational organisation that I know. You know, it's mind-blowing.
Judy, you're a proud mum who is devoted to both her boys, but I understand also that in the back of your mind, you know that Tim's needs are still great and that you spend a lot of time worrying about what happens when you can no longer care for him.
Oh, yeah, and that wakes me up in the middle of the night in a cold sweat all the time. I can't breathe. And I'm terrified of what's going to happen because the world hasn't changed that much. And as much as they've changed with the little kids with autism, at the other end there hasn't been a lot done. So we're trying to go through that process now without a big family network. And I can't, you know, I've only got the one other son. Mm. And that's he doesn't have a wife or family of his own yet. It's a big responsibility to put onto him, which he said he'll gladly take. But we're trying to develop this program that's called A Circle of Friends to support people for the rest of Tim's life. And what I've found in this whole journey is just how good people are. Yeah, we've done nothing on our own. It's always other people coming into our life to support us, to reach out, to encourage us, to give us opportunity, which is all I ever asked for Tim was opportunity. And so I hope that there's a process that we can get to through that. But it's that is a really big thing, and it's terrifying.
While mums and dads who are told that they have an autistic child aren't dealing with the same exclusion that you were dealing with when you had that same news, it's still a tough life. What words of encouragement do you have for those mums and dads who perhaps even today just received that news?
It always gets better. Everyone I've seen as we've gone through this journey, it always gets better. And the other great thing about it, it's a gift for us that we learn to live life differently. We don't all have the same fairy tale. We don't all have the same story. And from Tim, my life, without Tim, my life would have been absolutely meaningless. And I have learned so much more about how to communicate with people, how to find the pleasure in the most simplest of moments, how to stretch myself a little bit further, not to think the whole world has to be around the way I think. And that is a gift that too many people go through life without receiving. I am truly blessed.
Judy Sharp, I'd love to have a chat with Tim. Could you put him on for me?
Sure will.
Hi, Tim. You ready? Come, buddy.
Thank you.
Rob Dwayne.
Oh, yes. Hello.
Hello, Tim. Thank you for talking with me.
Hi, Dwayne. How are you? I'm good.
I'm really well, Tim. Tim, I love Laser Beak Man.
You like Laser Beak Man. That's really great.
I love him. Now, tell me about when you first met Laser Beak Man, when you created him. Do you remember that when you did that?
I think I made him up when I was like 11 years old, Dwayne.
And what are his special powers for people who don't know him like I do?
He has a laser in his beak, Dwayne.
Your drawings are all around the world right now, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Dwayne. They're really good.
They are very good. I love the way that they have the colours, and they do lots of things. You take up the entire page with them, don't you?
Oh, yes, I do, Dwayne.
Now, because of those drawings, though, you've met lots and lots of different people.
Oh, yes, I sure do. Wayne Bennett.
No.
Cate Blanchett.
Really?
Yeah, that's the one.
Did you take your photo with Cate Blanchett?
Oh, yeah, at Tupac, like it was only 4 years ago.
Wow. Is she very beautiful?
Yeah, she's really beautiful, Dwayne.
And is Wayne Bennett really beautiful too?
Oh, no, he's a football coach.
Yes, he is. He's a very good football coach, as it turns out, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
Are you a Brisbane Broncos fan?
No, definitely not.
No? No. So who do you follow in the football?
I don't follow in the football, Dwayne.
You're too busy drawing.
Yeah, I'm too busy drawing and I'm too busy doing lots of things.
Now, when you met people like Cate and Wayne, what did they say? What did you talk about? Do you remember?
I think I gave Wayne Bennett a drawing of that one at the Powerhouse like it was only 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And what about Cate?
She saw my exhibition at the Outer Box Festival, Dwayne.
And you've been overseas as well with your drawings, haven't you?
Oh, yes, I have. I think I've been to America.
And what was your favourite bit about travelling to America?
Going to Nashville, Tennessee, Dwayne.
You like country music?
I like rock music, Dwayne.
Rock music? Is that where you met the Ghost Ballerinas?
Yeah, that's the one. The Ghost Ballerinas are really... they're a good band, Dwayne.
They are. And in fact, you have helped them with one of their albums, haven't you?
Oh, yes, I sure did.
What did you do?
I just did a drawing for them.
And it's on one of their album covers and their CDs, isn't it?
Yeah, that's one. It's called Play Me on the Radio. I'm really famous.
Yes, you are really famous. Hey, tell me about your brother Sam. Where's he?
He's a swim coach, Dwayne. He's only 23 and he'll be 24 next week.
Has he taught you to swim or did you learn that all by yourself?
I learned that by myself. I'm a really good swimmer, Dwayne. Are you a good swimmer?
Yeah, sometimes. Hey, if you draw really well and you swim really well, what else do you love doing?
I love playing video games, Dwayne.
Like what?
I got a Wii U and my brother's got an Xbox 360.
Oh, and who's better?
I am.
Yeah. I thought that might be the answer. Hey, tell me about your mum. How much do you love your mum?
I love her lots in the world.
Now, for people who haven't met your mum, because I had a lovely talk with her on the telephone before you.
Good, Dwayne.
Can you describe your mum for me?
My mum, she's really nice and she's beautiful.
And is she a good cook?
Yeah, she's a good cook. I normally cook chopped chip muffins. Sometimes I normally get them, the muffin mix from Aldi's.
Okay, so you like swimming, you like drawing, and you like cooking chopped chip muffins.
And video games as well.
And video games as well. You're very busy, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Dwayne.
Hey, listen, before I go, tell me about Laserbeak Man's next big adventure. Have you got another adventure on the way?
Next adventure, I think we're doing the TED Talk next month in April.
Wow. Is that the Sydney Opera House?
Yes, that's the one, Dwayne.
Have you been there before?
I think I had an exhibition at the Opera House in 2008.
Wow, you really are famous, aren't you?
Yeah, thank you, Dwayne.
Wow. Tim, I want to thank you for talking with me on the telephone. Can you put Mum back on for me?
Oh, yes, that'll be good. Thank you, Dwayne.
Have a good day.
I will. Mum, Dwayne.
He's pretty special.
What a tremendous character.
He is. He's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, well, I know why you're proud of him, and it's not just because of art. It's for a whole lot of other reasons. Hey, Judy, you've been an inspiration to us. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Dwayne.